The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Another day, another incredibly knowledgeable, experienced figure, long involvement in defence, whether as a minister or as a military chief, telling us, telling the country, telling the Prime Minister, we are not spending enough on defence and we need to do more. We need to do it urgently. This time it's George Robertson, now Lord Robertson, former Labour Defence Secretary. He was the NATO chief as well for many years. And he's the author of this government's Strategic Defence Review, published last year. And he says the UK security is in peril, his words. The country's leaders have shown over years corrosive complacency towards defence. He's accused non-military experts in the Treasury, he says, of, in his words, vandalism, and says we simply cannot basically fund our defence with a ballooning welfare bill. For many, many, well, centuries, Britain patrolled the seas. We had that naval presence. That brought with it not just defence of our nations, but our interests, but also economic security as well. Now, we've been relying on America for quite a few decades now to do a lot of that. But, you know, when America came a-calling, whether you agree or disagree with the timing or the aims of the Iraq conflict, America came a-calling, we were lacking at that point. We couldn't even defend our own RAF base in Cyprus, not to allow the French to do, which I think should be a source of national humiliation, in my view. But we can't even patrol our own seas, the channel near us. We allow Russian naval vessels and shadow fleet to just, you know, go through the channel, and we don't act because we haven't got the ships to do so. That has an economic impact, as you say, as well as a prestige impact as well.
The fact is that we've got, in the Ministry of Defence, there are more diversity and inclusion groups, 92, than we have working Challenger tanks. Now,
I'm sorry. Can we just let that sink in, everybody? I mean, that is an extraordinary statistic.
It certainly is. Just let it sink in. What did he say? More diversity and inclusion groups, 92, than they have working Challenger tanks. Britain's sickness, it's real. And you know, as you've heard on this program, we've talked about this perfect storm that's developing and how everyone's using the latest excuse, Donald Trump did this, Putin's doing this, so we've got to build up and build a military machine, and we've got to get ready for war. They're doing it all over the world. And then there's little England, little Britain, that's there, sick as ever. I'll get to an article later. They don't want to spend money on defense. Like he said, I mean, we simply cannot fund our defense with a ballooning welfare bill. Tells you everything you need to know about the once mighty British Empire. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at our website, thetrumpet.com, or at the Rumble channel or the YouTube channel. We appreciate our beloved producer subbing in on yesterday's show. The show not missing a beat. Always plenty of good content to get into. Today, if we have time, although I saw my notes continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger, but if we have time, we might get into a Bible study that I'd like to produce for a program, a recorded program later today, if possible. We'll get to Britain's sickness in just a bit. I want to give a quick update on the world at large, and then also Iran, the fact that we're drawing close to a ceasefire there. But first, play this from Maria. This is President Trump with Maria Bartiromo yesterday, clip 6.
I'm doing a great job for the country and for the world. You know, we've had no help, zero, from NATO. We're there for them. They're not there for us. And what it means, if they're not there for us here, they're not going to be there for us. So why are we spending hundreds of billions of dollars a year on NATO if they're not going to be with us? If they're not going to be with us on Iran, they're not going to be with us on a much bigger subject than Iran.
You see where this is headed. As we've been saying, Yesterday, if you watch Mr. Livingston's show, the cold open, here's Donald Trump. I mean, you talk, it was almost like they have this romantic connection, President Trump with Meloni of Italy. He was saying how beautiful she was. And now they've had a falling out. Now, because of Iran, because of the comments about the Pope, and, you know, it shows you the power that the Pope has, not just in Italy, but in Europe as well. I mean, not even Trump and Meloni can get along at this stage. How does this happen? America unleashes this attack on the number one state sponsor of terrorism. It goes after Persia. It goes after Iran together with Israel. And yet more and more, you're seeing the biggest headlines coming out of Europe, of all things. And you hear President Trump there saying, we're not helping, they're not helping us. Why should we help them? This is a divorce that we have been prophesying for decades. I mean, that's significant. It goes back before the Philadelphia Church of God. It goes back to Herbert W. Armstrong. And it's happening. I mean, that alliance is broken. Britain is broken. America's sick. I mean, there's still some power there. But as far as sin goes, I mean, there's a sickness that has set in Israel. And you sure see it. You sure see it in Britain. As I say, we'll get to that in a second. First, again, Iran. Here's clip five.
Well, you keep saying was. Is this war over?
I think it's close to over, yeah. I mean, I view it as very close to over. And we're not finished. We'll see what happens. I think they want to make a deal very badly.
That's pretty unprecedented. I mean, having direct talks like that.
I have talks with everybody, but it's very effective. I think you're going to have a great deal. I think I had the greatest year, the greatest opening year. I've read the greatest. Look, I ended eight wars. A ninth is coming. But I ended eight wars. Nobody's ever ended one war. Who's ended one? Nobody. I ended eight.
That's quite the record. Eight wars, and who's ended one war? Nobody. Nobody. So this man right here is the only man in history to end wars. I like, too, how he said it's close to over and immediately followed it up by saying, we're not finished. It's over. It's just about over. It's almost over. And we're not finished. There's much more to do. JNS says U.S. Iran said to have reached in principle truce extension deal. This, as I say, from JNS, it says the United States and Iran reached an in-principle agreement to extend their fragile ceasefire beyond next week to allow more time for diplomacy, regional officials told the Associated Press on Wednesday. They've been working to salvage the truce, it says, since or before it, rather, expires on April 22. Al Monitor says this, U.S. President Donald Trump said leaders of Lebanon and Israel will speak, saying he was trying to get a little breathing room between the countries after more than 6 weeks of war between Israel and the Lebanese. So we're moving from the war phase to the dialogue phase. And what was it Herbert Armstrong used to say? I mean, we always use, or rather, we always lose the war for peace. So we can talk about peace. We can talk about ending wars. But that's where, you know, the Israelite nations are most vulnerable. If they're not going on the offensive, if they're not laying siege to the enemy, they're vulnerable. Because then the enemies are allowed to regroup, to rebuild, and to continue with their mission. And then you add Britain to the story. I mean, they're pitifully weak. And everyone knows it. Britain knows it. And the British people. You could go to the British people and say, listen, there's Putin, there's the rise of Germany. Look, at you've got Orange Hitler over here. And it's not going to faze them. It just won't. Listen, just pay, take our taxes and make sure you extend all these welfare programs. As they say, I mean, the sickness is real. Donald Trump had a tweet with respect to Lebanon and Israel. Washington Post says U.S. sends additional naval forces to the Middle East amid the Iran blockade. So that continues. The blockade of Hormuz, and one of the officials at the Pentagon just announced earlier that it was, I think it was earlier this week, saying it was complete and total. I mean, it's completely shut down with American forces. And so more forces are headed in that direction. The Pentagon is sending thousands of additional troops into the Middle East in the coming days. Back to President Trump with Maria Bartiromo. She asked him about Great Britain, clip 7.
Did you see that Britain suffered the biggest growth forecast downgrade in the G7?
Yeah, well.
So their economy is impacted.
It's the UK. I would say this. They got to stop with the windmills. And they got to open up the North Sea. They have the North Sea in Aberdeen, Scotland. It's the biggest, one of the most incredible oil fields anywhere in the world. It's got hundreds of years left. And you know what they do? They closed it because they want so much that the oil company, the oil companies are begging them to go there. They called me, please speak to them. They made it impossible because of the environmentalists, the horrible environmentalists that hurt that country so badly.
He certainly does a good job of exposing the radical left. All of these crazy left-wing policies. Here they've got these oil fields that would last for a couple hundred years. And that would no doubt fund the buildup for defense in Britain. But you can't do it because of the windmills. The Telegraph has a piece today. Britain has lost the will to defend itself. A little over 20 years ago, I asked General Sir Mike Jackson what worried him most. He was chief of the general staff, and Britain was fighting simultaneous wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. I expected an answer about operations, manpower, or equipment. Instead, he simply replied, ethos. He feared that Britain was losing the collective national will to defend itself and its interests. Ethos is the problem. It's not a lack of manpower or equipment. Britain has lost the will to fight for anything, except for welfare. They've lost the will to fight. This is straight out of Leviticus 26. Keir Starmer has not resourced our defenses adequately, but we should ask, why not? And ask why Rishi Sunak did not do so. Why Boris Johnson did not do so? Why Theresa May and David Cameron and Gordon Brown and Tony Blair did not do so? I mean, this goes way back. It's like those efforts back in the 90s, or I guess it would have been the early 2000s, Afghanistan, Iraq. That was like the last hurrah for Britain, and of course it was just to support America's effort, America's firepower. But now, I mean, Britain has nothing to offer. They've got more DEI programs in the military than they actually have military equipment. It's unbelievable. It says, and to answer that question, we must accept the blunt truth that our politicians have not resourced our defenses because the public has not wanted them. The nation has not been prepared to pay the price for its own defense. So the British people, threat here, threat there. That's okay. I mean, we've got football and we've got welfare. We've got everything that we need. This is the ex-Labor Defense Secretary George Robertson, clip 4.
We can't do business as usual. Our adversaries don't think that way, and we can't afford to do it. Public attention, of course, is focused on planes, tanks, and ships that we're short of. But they are the important baubles on the Christmas tree. We need to focus on the tree itself. We're simply not ready. And we need to rebuild war readiness in order to deter any possible adversary. Deterrence is far cheaper than war. As Vladimir Putin, whose war economy is consuming huge amounts of money and lives, will eventually find out. Our country, this country, made its last payment for the Second World War in 2016. And unlike Putin in Ukraine, we actually won that war. So building deterrence will not be quick and it won't be cheap. The public need to face that uncomfortable fact or suffer the consequence of not being safe in a very, very turbulent world.
Some prescient words there. Like I said, everyone else is arming for war, except Britain. Everyone else in Europe arming for war, but not the British people. He said their deterrence is far cheaper than war. There's no deterrence, though. They're not preparing for anything. They're not prepared to fight. Defense spending in Britain, it's unpopular with voters. So that's why the long list of PMs, as I listed there in that Telegraph piece, none of them have done anything about it. Not Boris Johnson, Theresa May, Gordon Brown, Tony Blair. You go back to the early 2000s, the 1990s. It's the same story. Poll after poll points to complacency and delusion on security. For years, the Ipsos Issues Index has shown defense far down the list of voter concerns, consistently eclipsed by the NHS, the cost of living, and immigration. Not the beloved NHS, the worshipped. NHS is a god in Britain. Let's fund the NHS. And do they ever? Says Office for National Statistics surveys point to the same direction. Public priorities are shaped by immediate domestic concerns, not long-term national security. And really, you know, even though America still has the push-button firepower, as we've been noting, I mean, the spirit of this, it's here in America as well, even in the MAGA movement. No more foreign wars. Just concentrate on domestic issues. And really, that's a nice way of saying we've got so many sins, we're so drenched in sin, there's so much sickness. Every dollar, every pound has to go to the NHS. It has to go to domestic programs. It has to go to the welfare state. And meanwhile, Germany, Russia, China, Iran, they're arming for war. They see this is their opportunity. You talk about a new world order. They're preparing for one. They're not arming for deterrence. They're arming for an offensive. Those traditional enemies of the United States and Britain. And there's no let up. Even when they get punched in the mouth like Hamas, they come back. Iran will do the same thing. Here there's all the talk now of negotiation and a truce, a ceasefire, which is just another way of saying no unconditional surrender from Iran. Just a pause in the fighting and an opportunity for America's enemies, Britain's enemies, to regroup, to rebuild, to rearm. The Telegraph says here, the causes of our growing national indifference to defense are varied but linked. The first is disarmingly simple. For generations, we have lived without facing a direct threat to the homeland. And that, too, I mean, that jumps right out of the pages of your Bible. Woe unto them who are at ease in Zion. I mean, read Amos 3, Amos 6. Look at Revelation 3 about the Laodicean spirit, rich and increased with goods, blind to what's actually happening. Jesus himself said the last days would be like the days before the flood of Noah's day, when people would just be carrying on in riotous living as if nothing, there's no danger. There's no danger on the horizon. We have been lulled to sleep. We have been lulled into a state of complacency. And there's a lot of lessons to draw from this regarding spiritual warfare. Our adversary, the devil, goes about as a roaring lion. He's looking for prey. He's looking for a target. And he preys on the weak, the defenseless, the ones who are unprepared, the ones who aren't ready for an attack. The problem in Britain is that they're unwilling to fight really for anything. There's another story I have. I don't know if I'll have time, but British law enforcement, they won't even go after pedophiles with some, you know, some punch. Listen, we've got to get these guys off the street. Instead, they're making these weak announcements. Listen, we'd like for you to, you know, kind of alert us to what you're doing, turn yourself in or whatever. So much weakness and sickness. And of course, these rape gangs, it's been going on for decades now in Britain. The will to fight evil, to fight sin, to fight adversaries, it's gone. And it's prophesied in our booklet, He Was Right. This is the chapter on America winning its last war. It talks about Mr. Armstrong's forecast based on Leviticus 26. The pride of our power being broken. God has broken the pride of our power. It says, today, because of rampant sin and disobedience to His law, God is turning those blessings into curses. I mean, we have been blessed fabulously so for the last 2.5 centuries. But that's changing. Those blessings are turning into cursings. God gave us every imaginable good. But what have we done with those blessings? He quotes Mr. Armstrong, like Rome, we've grown fat and prosperous and lazy. He quotes from an old Plain Truth article. I mean, this goes back to 1956. That's 70 years ago? 70 years ago. We're the wealthiest as compared to any other nation. And we are fast growing lazy and soft, seeking luxury and pleasure and excitement, idleness and ease, labor-saving, step-saving devices and gadgets. That's 1956. I mean, look at people today. They had the moon landing in 1969. The whole world was watching that. I mean, if they were walking by a television, they stopped and they watched. Just a couple weeks ago, we had Artemis that circled the moon. First time ever. And how many people paid attention to that? Maybe a tiny, tiny sliver of world population. No, we've got so many gadgets to keep our attention glued to the screen. We can't break away from it for anything. Even when the bombs start dropping, you can envision a British state and its citizens saying, listen, just pay for NHS. Just pay for the welfare programs. Make sure the domestic issues are taken care of. He Was Right says, our immense wealth in tandem with our broken will is a dangerous combination. It certainly is. As Mr. Armstrong wrote in the June 1954 Plain Truth, aggressor nations covet that wealth. Seeing our weakness and reluctance to use our power only intensifies the desire of these aggressor nations to take that wealth as soon as they are strong enough to do so. There's other nations, aggressor nations, that look at those oil fields north of the UK and say, you know what? I mean, that's a cash cow right there. Now, the environmentalists don't want Britain to do anything with it. You talk about a self-inflicted wound. It's a deadly wound. What are aggressor nations thinking, though? They're preparing for war. They're preparing for an offensive. This is straight out of the United States and Britain in prophecy. And Herbert Armstrong wrote that, what, the first version was in the 1930s, I believe. Maybe the late 20s. tomorrow's news today. This is my father from a Key of David program in 2021, clip 11.
There is a spiritual dimension to this that we don't understand, and we need to understand it. If you look at Leviticus 26 and verse 19, it says when Israel reached the zenith of their power, that God says, I will break the pride of your power. You will have all kinds of power, but you won't have the courage and the pride to use it, and the honor, you won't have it. The greatest power ever, but they're afraid to use that power. And it's all going to lead directly into the return of Jesus Christ as King of Kings. That's what is going to happen.
Broken will, lost the pride of the power. That Telegraph article, by the way, the title, Britain Has Lost the Will to Defend Itself. This one from The Spectator. What happened to Britain's fighting spirit? Do you think this is significant? We're talking about the greatest empire in the history of the world. It's lost its fighting spirit. When war is in the air, young men traditionally sign up, it says, and they traditionally sign up disproportionately from the northeast of England, where I grew up. This author says, the country must be prepared for war, says Air Chief Marshal Sir Richard Knighton, head of our armed forces. But what use is all this puffed up talk of a battle-ready Britain if we have no soldiers? In the Northeast, the supply of soldiers has slowed not just to a trickle, but to a drip. You see the headline there. What happened? How did this happen? What happened to the military? What happened to the mighty British Navy that used to rule the waves? That's not that long ago. What happened to the fighting spirit? Sunderland, for instance, home to nearly 11,000 veterans, sent just 10 men into the army last year. 10. Like that guy said in the clip, I mean, there's more woke programs than there are tanks, soldiers, military equipment. This article says here, of the Northeast's young men of prime enlisting age, 16 to 24, about one in five are considered not just unemployed, but inactive. They're NEETs, not in education, employment, or training. And there's more and more of them every year. I keep looking at the numbers and blinking in disbelief. What in the world are they all doing? What are they doing? More than half of the NEETs report themselves as too ill to work, with many claiming to be anxious or depressed. So what they're doing is probably weed, marijuana. But what we have done to our culture, if the great-grandchildren of the men who served in the Second World War are too anxious even to serve coffee, what have we done? What's happened? It's not like they're just sitting there saying, I don't want to fight. They don't want to do anything. They don't want to work. It makes me think of that article we went through a few weeks back. Young British women that are out there, you know, promiscuously engaging in sex and getting pregnant and then having an abortion because, well, they don't want their child to go through a miserable life like theirs. It's very sad. The Army needs the Northeast, but the Northeast desperately needs the Army too. Those NEETs need a way out. They need all the things that decent military training could offer. Listen to this. Self-respect, physical strength, resilience, a future. They need far, far more than the Army is currently offering them. I mean, it used to be that training in these military institutions, it built character in the individual, self-respect, physical strength, good health, resilience, vision, a future. So much of that is gone. How tough are our nations? There's, I mean, you look at America's effort in Iran. I mean, there are a few remnants here and there, but even that, I mean, that's push button. It would take some real toughness for President Trump to stand against the world and say, you know what, we're going to go in and we're going to change the regime. We're going to do it forcefully. We're going to do it daringly. We're going to show some courage. All of this power, but what good is the power if the will behind it is weak? This, I mean, what's happened in recent months with Iran and, you know, other hotspots, it really has exposed the sickness in Israel. And it's also exposed the motivations, the plans, the designs of the aggressor nations that look at these oil fields in the UK or in the sea near the UK, or they look at America, they look at the vast wealth and prosperity and strength and power that America's enjoyed for 250 years. And human nature being what it is, I mean, it lusts for that power, for those resources, for that wealth. We of all people should be able to see where this is headed. I mean, as I said the other day, everything converges on that Olivet prophecy. The whole world aligning against America, as we had in the March issue of The Trumpet. I mean, this one here, that, like, this is April. What's next? This is about Iran. You know, World War III will start with Iran. Will America win? The shockwaves foretelling Iran's rise and fall. That's tomorrow's news today. I hope you subscribe to this magazine. If you don't, call the operator there and get a free, there's no cost, no obligation, get a free one-year subscription to The Trumpet magazine. My father had an article back in 1998. I mean, this is almost 30 years old, this piece. It was at The Trumpet. Weakness only encourages strong dictatorial leaders. How can we correct this deadly disease of a broken will? Do you think the neighbors around Britain, those that aligned against Britain in World War II, do you think they see weakness? Do you think they, you know, it's easy, as I've said, Donald Trump is the perfect excuse. Well, we need a military machine. He's going to abandon NATO. And then Putin's on the march. We got to have a new military machine. But the truth of it is, the quiet part is that they see weakness in Israel. They see weakness in Britain. And they see weakness. They see sickness in America. How can you not see it? As impressive as the push button warfare might be or might look, you look at the national debt. You look at the division in America. You look at the welfare programs. You look at the runaway immigration, even though President Trump has certainly clamped down on that. But what about what's already gotten into the country through the Joe Obama years? What about the damage that causes? There's a marvelous solution to this problem, my father wrote. If only we would listen to God's warning. God even prophesied about our broken will. What's more, he had a strong hand in producing this broken will. It's actually connected to God. I mean, God is, he's smiting us. Curses are setting in. We're going against God, as it says in Ezekiel. God is against us. That's how he words it, actually. I mean, that's a terrifying position to be in when God is against you. We want God on our side, and just talking about him is not going to bring him to our side. We've got to fight for him. We've got to fight against sin. We've got to fight for the family. We've got to fight for true education. I mean, God's people, they don't take up physical arms and fight in a physical army. But they're going to join together with Christ at his return and fight the aggressor nations of this earth. You can read about it in Revelation 19, Revelation 11. We've gone through some of this recently. And we're going to come back to the Olivet prophecy, as I've been saying. It says here, we should be living in the midst of God's abundant blessings. Instead, we're being cursed by the living God. Our broken will is one of those curses. That's what we need to better appreciate. When you see this broken will in Britain, this is not a blessing. This is a curse. It's a curse. All the training, think of it, all the training, the character development, the discipline, the self-respect, the physical health and strength. I mean, the military, it used to be that the military would instill those characteristics or traits. Not so much anymore. We gained our freedom through much bloodshed and courage, and our freedom cannot be sustained by cowards, my father said. This is 1998. We can easily deceive ourselves, but our enemies know the truth and will one day soon put us to the test. That's what's coming. That's history. That's happened before. This has played out like a broken record. That's the truth. The enemies, you see, the aggressor nations, they sense weakness. They look at this as an opportunity. And one day they're going to put us to the test. One day it's going to be an attack launched on Britain, an attack launched on America. Don't be lulled to sleep. Don't bury your head in the sand because of the relative peace that we've enjoyed. It says here, the further we get from God, the more cowardly we become. The closer we are to God, the more we manifest courage. The more we have courage, the closer we are to God, the more you have that fighting spirit. I mean, did Jesus Christ have that fighting spirit when he was praying through the night at Gethsemane, asking for God to give him strength, to give him a submissive, surrendered attitude so that he could submit to God's will, so that he could follow God all the way through to the end and never give up? That was quite a fighting spirit. And if you lose that, I mean, you are vulnerable. You are weak. You're lacking character. You're laying down your arms. You're tired of fighting. You're a quitter. We can't let that happen to us. Certainly not in God's church. That fighting spirit, I mean, it has to be alive. And well, it has to be strong. Every day is a battle. The Telegraph, this other piece I mentioned earlier, police too busy to arrest pedophiles. Well, isn't that sad? We've got more important things to attend to besides adults sexually abusing children. Pedophiles who view indecent images of children are not being arrested because some forces are too busy, the report has warned. The number of referrals to police for online child sex abuse rose by 66% between 2023 and 2024. Hold on a second. Let's just back up. This is 3 years ago. From 2023 to 2024, the referrals to police for online sex abuse rose 66%. How is this possible? The filth, the perversion, the deviance. I mentioned the other day, I'm not sure if Mr. Livingston got into it at the back end of his program, but Swalwell in D.C. resigning in shame. And just getting away with all these crimes. Some of the articles about him, I mean, even our news gatherers are trying to stay away from it to some extent because it's so perverse. And it's gone on for years. And people in high offices have been fully aware of it. And they just turn a blind eye to it. I mean, even his former staff is well aware of what was going on. because so many of them experienced it, the abuse, or they witnessed it. It says here, a report by His Majesty's Inspectorate found that some suspects were being asked to attend interviews voluntarily instead of being arrested because it meant less paperwork. Can you imagine the police sending out these notices? We'd really like for you to set up a meeting with law enforcement, an interview, and just do it voluntarily. It saves us a lot of paperwork. It saves a lot of time. I mean, after all, we've had, you know, we've had 66% more referrals this year than last year. So can you do us a favor and turn yourself in? What country does this? Well, pretty much Israelite countries. So much weakness. It says here a report, well, I read that bit. The number of registered sex offenders has increased by almost 50% over the past decade, with 3,000 more added in the past year alone. Every year in Britain, you know, the nation that doesn't want to fight, that doesn't want to put any of its tax dollars, and there's a lot of tax dollars, they don't want to put it toward defense. No, NHS. NHS reigns supreme. 3,000 pedophiles added as sex offenders just last year. 3,000 more every year. In a lot of these cases, I'm sure they're repeat offenders. You know, back in World War II, when Britain was fighting for its survival, do you think there were 3,000 sex offenders added to the roll every year? You know that's not the case. You know it wasn't like that. They weren't morally perfect or upright back at that time, but they weren't caught up in this. And they were willing to fight for their country, for their survival. They were willing to fight for France, to fight alongside America, to fight for a cause, to fight to crush tyranny. Not so today. I mean, why are these sins so, I mean, these perverse sins, why are they so pervasive? Why are they increasing? Why is this problem growing? Well, you've got to look into the heart of man, and you've got to look into Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 and the curses that have set in, and you've got to look at our sins. This is what God wants to turn us from. Turn from our wicked ways and beseech God. Pray to God. He'll hear you. He'll draw near to you if there's a repentant attitude and spirit. Back to that Spectator piece, what happened to Britain's fighting spirit? Some bullet points from that article. The country must be prepared for war, but we have no soldiers. I think I gave you that quote previously. Talks about the Northeast and the fact that they can't get anyone to enlist. Too busy to arrest pedophiles, the story we just went through. Here's another one. British taxes rising faster than anywhere else in the world. Is this a good sign? Is this a sign of a healthy nation? British taxes. Raising taxes at a pace that's faster than anywhere in the world. Look at this. Look at this graph. That is the sign of sickness. Sickness from they're taxed like they've never been taxed before. That's number one. And number two, those tax dollars, they're certainly not going toward defense. They're certainly not going toward deterrence. They're certainly not going toward building a British war machine. I mean, they're doing that in Germany. Why are they doing it in Germany but not in Britain? What's the difference? Well, if you know a little bit about Bible prophecy, you know the difference. I mentioned that Olivet prophecy quote from Nuclear Armageddon is at the door, my father's book, or a little booklet. saying that everything revolves around this prophecy. Everything revolves around Matthew 24 and Luke 21. When it comes to Bible prophecy, it certainly does. It reveals more to you about what is happening now than any other chapter in the Bible. I mean, when the Olivet prophecy, this greatest sermon on prophecy ever given, when Christ is talking about great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of this world, I mean, that should jolt the people of Britain, the people of America, the people of little Judah in the Middle East. It should shake the nations, but it won't do it because we're fast asleep. Notice what my father says here. I didn't mention this part the other day. How many traditional Christians heed his warning, the Olivet prophecy? How many Christian leaders do you hear even discuss Matthew 24? It is the most important prophetic message Christ gave when he was on this earth. They talk about the person of Christ continually, but not his message. You see, this is exactly the way Satan wants it to be. Just talk about Jesus. Satan doesn't mind that. In fact, Satan thinks that's great, because it's a false Jesus. And there's no focus on what he actually said, on the words of Christ, the red letters, like in Matthew 24. Talk about Jesus, but not about his message. What was his message? Well, among other things, you have Matthew 24, verses 21 and 22, about great tribulation. I've mentioned this March issue of the Trumpet magazine. The world is uniting against America. It's uniting against the United States. Like I said, how can lashing out at Iran arouse the whole of the world? Italy's now flip-flopped. European leaders, they see what's happening in Iran and they hate. It makes them hate all the more. Not the mullahs. Trump, you see. The problem is with Trump. The problem is not with the Pope. No, he's a peacemaker. The problem is with Trump. The world is uniting against America. I mean, it's not word for word, but it's about the same headline as this one from Politico. Trump is facing an increasingly defiant world. Look at that. Look at those two covers, or those two headline features. One's at the Trumpet and the other's at Politico. It says, for months and months, President Donald Trump has bullied other countries on everything from trade to how they govern themselves. It says, I think I touched on this the other day, but still, in just the last few days, however, a handful of global players have defied him, showing the limits of his influence. Orban lost in Hungary, Pope Leo's comments, we went through that earlier in the week. Further on, it says, many in the foreign affairs establishment have long fretted that Trump and his team approach the world as if it's all about making real estate deals, the way the president once did in New York, but treating Russia's war in Ukraine or the Palestinians' claims on Gaza as being merely about land misses out on how identity, politics, and the desire to simply survive as a people is what fuels many conflicts. Trump and his team often fail to realize that people tend to fight for what gives their life meaning beyond the purely rational and material cost-benefit analysis. You look at what the rest of the world is doing, all the aggressor nations, the signs are there. The handwriting is on the wall. It's there. God is showing us. It's like I've said with respect to the Olivet prophecy. I mean, the disciples came to Christ seeking signs, asking him, show us the signs. Show us what's going to happen. Show us how this plays out. Tell us what happens at the end. And Christ did. He certainly did. This is from The Hill. Well, it's a follow-up on the feud between J.D. Vance and the Pope, and of course before that, President Trump and the Pope. I guess I've got a few minutes. I have a whole nother section, but I probably don't have time to kick that off. So I'll give you a few bits from this, and maybe we can finish a minute or two early. Vice President Vance downplayed concerns about President Trump's ongoing feud with Pope Leo. We played the clips of this the other day. Vance, who's promoting his upcoming book about his conversion to Catholicism, dismissed. You can't make this up. You know, he's out there downplaying it. He's out there, you know, and he's trying to be careful with his words, but he's out there criticizing the Pope, criticizing the church, even as he writes a book about his conversion to Catholicism. And then his wife, I mean, she's in one of the Eastern religions, right? I think. I have to do my background checks on the religious among us. You had Hannity, as I went through the other day. You've got, I mean, it's a mixed bag of everything. There's something for everyone in this world when it comes to religion. Yesterday, I gave an entire lecture about the purpose for the church. Who even talks about this? The church is the spiritual organism that God has raised up to train members in the church to rule, to teach. It's the institution through which we grow. If our heart's in the work of the church, then we grow in character. There's this great quote in Mystery of the Ages where it talks about, you know, those that try to go it alone, the loner Christian, as Mr. Armstrong called them. And I mean, let's be honest here. There's loner Christians all over the world. They may call themselves Episcopalian or Presbyterian or Baptist or Catholic, but how many of them are really and truly devoted to their denomination? And even if they are, what about the other denominations? If we're going to be trained to rule with Christ, it has to be after the manner, as Mr. Armstrong says in chapter 6, that Jesus established. In Matthew 16, it says he established his church. Singular. It didn't say churches. It didn't say 400 denominations. He established the church. And those disciples of old, they made up the foundation of God's true church together with the prophets of old, Ephesians 2 and verse 20. And yet you have these great theologians of today, the preachers of today, that rely more on worldly sources or maybe some, you know, father of the church in the fourth century. It's not like that's wrong. I mean, we quote from Herbert Armstrong all the time, and he's been dead for 40 years. But he used to say, you don't believe me. You just take what I say or what I write and see if it's in the Bible. You've got to see for yourself. You've got to prove all things. And then hold fast that which is good. You always have to come back to the Bible. All scripture is given by inspiration from God. Now, God's inspired other books like Mystery of the Ages, but I mean, the Bible, that is the sacred word of God. Mystery of the Ages helps you understand the Bible. It's a beautiful relationship, the bond between those two books. But why can't we just go to the Bible? Well, because so many people believe it's outdated. It's 2,000 years old, 3,000 years old. We've got to get some more modern sources in. We've got to rely on more modern commentary. Well, okay, as long as it's based on the Bible, that's fine. But most people in this world don't care about that. And there's definitely some pretty strong and corrective sections of Scripture or passages that just make people wince. I mean, well, I don't know if I'm going to do that. I mean, that's a different time. The Bible's such a wonderful book. God's law is holy and just and right and perfect in every respect. And that's what you want to get back to. That's got to be the anchor for your spiritual diet, Bible study, being diligent in your study of God's inspired word. Well, as it happens, I took you a little bit over, but we're not charging for that extra content. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.